This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello, and welcome to our Market Talk Asia special. In this episode, we'll be focusing on the global macroeconomic topics affecting Asian investors. But we hope all of today's talking points, positive equity bond correlations, a focus on underlying corporate fundamentals, and how monetary policy in Japan is leading to non-existent returns for JGB holders will be of interest to all our listeners. I'm Frances Watson, and for this Market Talk special, I'm joined by two experts, Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy and Research in Hong Kong, and Matt Rees, Head of Global Strategies here in the UK. Ben, Matt, welcome to you both.
Hi, Frances.
Hi, Ben. And if I can just start off with you. I mean, look, markets have been so volatile, haven't they? Can we just start with where we are now in terms of some year-to-date numbers for both bonds and equities?
Yeah, it's a good time to have a look, actually, because it's almost the end of the first half of the time that we're recording anyway. So I'll give you some of the changes up to the close on Tuesday of this week, so the 28th of June, so within a couple of days of the end of the half. Anyway, I'm using Icon as a source or Bloomberg for some bond indices. But taking returns at that point, it's so hard to find anything that isn't a total disaster, unfortunately. The S&P 500 in the US is down 20%, NASDAQ down 29%. Actually, just thinking about here in Hong Kong, it's one of the bright spots, if you want to put it like that. The Hang Seng is only down 4%, but since the start of 2021, it's still down 18%. So you can see it had a pretty atrocious year last year. The one place that is up is the FTSE in the UK. It's still down, but only down 1%. It was up a couple of days ago. And the only reason it's not down by more is because of the significant exposure to commodities and oil in particular, some of those oil majors. And that is the only place it's up. So Brent oil is up 50%, 50% this year, would you believe? Lots of other commodities haven't been quite as good as oil. In fact, a lot of the industrial metals, so like aluminium or steel, they're still down. And that's to do with demand from China. Yeah, that's because China is driving that demand. And China hasn't been very strong. And they're just flipping to bonds, because Matt looks after our global bond strategy, so you can dig into more detail when you ask him. But just having a look at some of the bond returns, amazing how bad they've been and how consistent. So these are the global aggregate. So this is everything, treasuries and mortgage bonds and corporates. So the investment grade down 15% this year. Just the corporates, again, down 16%. High yield, global high yield, that's also down 16%. And emerging market dollars, sovereigns are down 17%. So very consistent, isn't it?
And what are you quoting in there, Ben? Is that local currency terms or is that dollar terms?
These are in dollars. Yeah, this is all in dollars.
Okay.
And actually, funny you say dollars, because, again, that's one of the places where if you bought dollars at the start of the year, you've done pretty well. So the DXY index currency is up 9%. But a lot, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a second, a lot of that is due to the fact that the dollar-yen, so the yen versus the dollar is down 18%, 18%. So again, some just massive moves. And you've done really well to find anything that hasn't gone down significantly so far this year.
Yeah. That I wish I'd had dollar cash. Anyway, moving on. So the correlation then, let's focus on that between bonds and equities, because I guess one of the main features, as you say, over the first half year, the last two quarters, has been that there's literally been nowhere to hide, has there? I mean, what, in your point of view, Ben, do you think investors are differentiating sufficiently between winners and losers?
As you say, everything's been a loser apart from commodities. So, at the minute, it feels as though there hasn't been any very clever relative value switches to be done, because everything's been going down. I think in the next part of this downturn, if we do start hitting recession risk, if we do start hitting a recession, then you probably will see bond yields start to fall, and government bonds will start to do a bit better, because markets will price in ultimately interest rate cuts. It'll be then that you'll see that correlation get back to normal. We're probably not a million miles away from that, to be fair. But only then will you be able to do some switching around. Right now, it's just you're just running for cover. I don't know if you've got anything to add on that, Matt.
the correlation it has been so terrible, and it's so unusual because bonds do normally protect you, and that's what's hurt so many people. But it is, it's so duration driven. So when we're talking about total returns, the total return on a US 30 year has been -27% year to date. So the worst performing asset class has basically been the long end of the treasury market and any credit market. So investors probably weren't differentiating sufficiently last year when they were owning global emerging markets, which is a very long duration index. It's half investment grade, half high yield. They were hoping to get probably more of the investment grade and less of the high yield in there. But actually what they got was massively long duration, which led to those bad total returns. And then also people thinking about buying a 30-year US Treasury rather than 10-year US Treasury or the kind of the IG corporate index, which is around about 9 years. Again, that resulted in the differential total returns of about 15% worse in the US 30-year.
And what about Japan? Because, I mean, in terms of, I mean, we all know, I think we all know why bonds have done so very badly with monetary tightening. And of course, the outlier in this is Japan, which refuses to tighten because, as I understand it, they don't think inflation's a problem there. I mean, where do JGB sit in anyone's portfolio at the moment, Matt?
Well, in the run-up to the Bank of Japan meeting a week and a half ago, it was an overwhelming short that people were thinking the Bank of Japan would have to break their yield curve control. And so you saw some very strange market reaction in the differential in prices between the futures market, which is where people were putting their shorts on the cash market. But the Bank of Japan has held true and hold firm to their ideals, and they are keeping on yield curve control, which obviously led the yen to weaken to all-time record lows. At the moment, they can carry on doing that because they still have some firepower left. Question marks about how much really is there. And they are definitely trying to change the inflationary backdrop, which with deflation for so long, but it will take some time to do that. But we do think the pressure will return to them because there are signs, definite signs, that inflation is increasing in Japan structurally, as well as obviously because of the currency effect as well.
And talking of pressure, should we just look at the default cycle, Matt? Because, I mean, obviously during COVID, what we had was a very short and shallow recession, I suppose you call it. But, you know, this time round, things are very different, aren't they? So how are you expecting defaults to pan out in the coming period?
Yeah, we just finished actually a really in-depth piece of research from our macro top-down and our bottom-up research analysts on corporate fundamentals. We had a presentation this Monday, and our head of research said in that meeting quite interestingly that the kind of corporate fundamentals, you know, are actually pretty good, particularly because corporates survived such an incredibly severe stress test with COVID. When we look at gross and net leverage levels, they have reduced from the peaks experienced in COVID. And US high yield leverage, particularly if you exclude the kind of gaming and transport sector, and transport's been hit so badly by COVID, US high yield leverage is back to 2014 levels. So this does give us some confidence that they'll be able to cope pretty well with whatever economic environment they've got to cope with in the coming 2 years. However, we do have some concerns. So US BBB companies, leverage has returned to the pre-COVID levels, but those were actually historically very high levels and something that we worried about back in 2019 and early 2020 before COVID really hit. So there are still some warning signs there, but corporate fundamentals have recovered to some degree.
And you say BBB, is that an area that particularly people focus on to see about where the stress is?
Yeah, people definitely look there. There are more cyclical companies there. And also the US index has become much more of a BBB index as companies have levered up. So it's a much larger part of the index compared to how it was 10 years ago as well.
I think it's just maybe if I jump in, because I mean, Matt is obviously a corporate bond expert. He's talking about publicly listed corporate bonds and the default cycle, as he says, it doesn't look that bad at the minute because all these publicly listed big companies, yeah, their balance sheets look pretty good. They probably could weather a relatively shallow recession. From a macro perspective, what I look at, which I think is interesting, is often it's the areas of the world, the sectors, the markets that have seen a huge increase in debt over the last 5 years, say, that generally is a good sign that over the next 2 or 3 years, there's going to be a problem. There's going to be a default cycle. And you've seen that, you know, the telecom sector leading up to 2000, or the financials up to 2008, even oil up to 2016. And we're now seeing it in the China property developer market, having seen a massive increase in debt for the last 5 years. So the question is, what has been increasing in debt? And it hasn't really been the corporate bond markets and the investment grades. It also hasn't been the high yield bond markets either. So we're talking about triple Bs. They don't go bust generally. It's the single Bs, the triple Cs, the lower down ones anyway. But again, there haven't been a massive increase. The place that has seen a big increase, I would say, is possibly leveraged loans. So this is the high yield loan market. That's been taken a lot of issuance away from the high yield bond market. So a lot of companies with very stretched balance sheets have been issuing loans. Maybe that's a place to be a bit more worried about. Maybe the property market, again, if you're looking at a place that hasn't done that badly this year, it's been property, hasn't it? But there's been a lot of debt associated with property. Again, this is nothing to do. I'm not forecasting issues for these areas. I haven't got a crystal ball, but these are places where we have seen at least a bit of debt increase. So it's a question mark.
And when you talk about, you know, global high yield, global, I mean, are there regional differences? Are some areas much more highly leveraged than others, for example?
High yield generally is dominated by the US market anyway. So it is really a large US market, and also, of course, emerging markets. But that's, when you start to look at emerging markets, there's all countries all over the place. So no, we're predominantly talking about the US high yield market here. Okay. Yeah.
So on the investment grade side, there is a definite differential emerging between US and European corporates. So US corporates have used up most of the excess cash that they generate. They bought from the markets back in COVID times, whereas European corporates have got a lot of that cash still sitting on their balance sheets. So we're definitely seeing European corporate leverage has gone back to kind of 2013, 2014 levels, whereas US corporates are back to pre-COVID, so it's still a bit too high, actually. So European corporate health is looking better in the IG world compared to US corporates.
Okay, that's interesting. So putting all this together then, how does it translate into forthcoming Q2 results? Because as I understand it, we've had valuation compression in the markets. What we haven't had altogether is earnings compression. And that's what analysts are, you know, they're already with the red pens, aren't they? Waiting to see what those statements are going to look like. What do you reckon, Ben?
Yeah. So the Q2 earnings season, I was just having, it hasn't really started yet, obviously, because we haven't finished Q2 as we're recording this. But again, in the S&P 500, it looks as though analysts are broadly expecting another increase in earnings compared to last year, sort of 6-8%. We'll see how that goes. What we're going to be looking out for, though, is going to be guidance. So we're going to be asking the CEOs, what do you think about consumer demand for the next couple of quarters? What's your planned capital expenditure? I mean, that's incredibly important. And I do think, because of partly how markets have reacted, I think there's a bit of caution. We've seen it from a few very important CEOs, haven't we, or people who like to talk a lot anyway, in terms of caution. And I was also thinking from a macro perspective about the forward-looking profit cycle. And our US economist has mapped his GDP forecast and the fact that a recession is more likely than not in his estimates. And he thinks that US profits could drop to where they were in 2019, so before COVID, so a couple of years ago. And, you know, this is not saying how the S&P would react necessarily, but the S&P was 20% lower in 2019 than where it was today. Now, that's just purely from that would be an earnings collapse, could see the S&P fall by another chunk. But you could also see multiples increase because people would at least be relieved that we're actually pricing in that drop in earnings. Sure. So we don't know how the S&P would necessarily react, but you know, I don't think a 20% fall in profitability or back to 2019 levels would be taken very positively.
And of course, we have seen some very weak consumer sentiment surveys, both in US and Europe. And that, you know, are those forward-looking surveys? They are forward-looking surveys, aren't they? So that, are the warning signs building up, if you like?
They ask various questions. And so it's hard to, and one of the questions that everyone has been asked that respond to very negatively is things about the cost of goods, of course. You know, is it a good time to buy a car? Well, no, it's not a good time because they're really expensive is the answer. So some of this isn't necessarily pessimism about the outlook. It's just annoyance about the cost of things. So from a headline perspective, you're right, the consumer confidence surveys are looking bad. Whether or not that translates into negative GDP is another question. I think it's just frustration at the minute, but that could boil over.
It's not a very happy call, this one, is it? I'm feeling a bit depressed. I mean, are there any sort of beacons of hope out there? I mean, either for you, Matt, or for you, Ben, where can we clutch at some straws somewhere?
Maybe on the valuation perspective, Matt. I mean, like I said, you're running the bond strategies and things are looking cheap, aren't they? I guess they're getting cheaper every day, but they're looking reasonably cheap.
Yeah, and that's the only straw that we can clutch at is where valuations have moved to in certain markets. So European investment grade now is trading at levels much wider than previous kind of recessionary fear periods of first quarter 16, fourth quarter 18. And actually, apart from just like that one very short month around COVID when illiquidity destroyed the market, European IG spreads are actually quite close to those COVID levels. And also EM high yields, you know, it's been hit by a lot of things, obviously, with the Russia-Ukraine war, as well as general market risk sentiment. But EM high yield is now yielding around about 11%. And it's only been wider than this in a kind of over just 10% of the time over a kind of 16-year time frame. So there are certain areas where we're pricing for recession. And we think there is value now.
And what about fund flows, Matt, then? What's happening to them? Are people sort of running for the hills still, or are they dipping toes in?
No, the technical data is pretty bad. There are still outflows. Some of this probably is first half related. So we're seeing an acceleration of outflows, particularly in US investment grade. It's interesting in emerging markets, we have seen a few periods, few times over the last couple of months where we have seen some inflows, particularly past after big periods of spread widening. But outflows are still happening in that asset class as well as high yield. So it's still not great, the flow picture.
Okay, and let's focus on China, Ben, a bit, because some good news there. They're lifting restrictions. Things are getting back to normal.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that is probably the most positive macro story. So the two things that we're looking out for that could make a difference if the, you know, the Russian invasion in Ukraine was to settle down and allow energy supply into Europe, then that would be a positive from an inflation perspective. And the second thing is if China managed to properly reopen and to efficiently put their positive economic support mechanisms into place. You know, they've been announcing all sorts of stuff from allowing people to subsidies for buying cars and reducing mortgage rates, providing more financing for small companies, etc. But the problem is everything's a bit gummed up with COVID at the minute. And, you know, China has been under sort of three issues. One is that zero COVID problem, which hopefully that will be sorted out in the next few months, as fingers crossed. The other is the regulatory crackdown on technology. There are some signs that that's improving, I suppose. And then the other one is the property developer market, which they've been trying to squeeze the credit there. The positives about regulatory crackdown and the property market are probably around valuation. I was just looking at Hang Seng Technology Index is down 55% since their peak back in February in 2021. 55%. It was the high yield China bond market. This is the ICE index, is down 58% since the middle of 2021. The peak again in 2021. Again, these numbers are from the close on the 28th of June. So again, it's almost like it just has to not get any worse, and these valuations will attract some flows at some point, won't they? Yes. They have to, because they've
you'd think
so
they'll
much.
Be bottom fishers at some point.
So.
You'd have thought so. Right. Okay. Well, we're halfway through the year, and boy, what a long 6 months it's been already. And of course, we don't give advice on LGIM talks. So I'm going to rephrase the question and say, if you were broadly then to rank regions for their prospects for the next 6 months, give us a flavour of what you're thinking. And maybe, Matt, you start with the bonds side of things.
Yes, I think, as I said, the region that we favour the most at the moment is Europe, despite all the problems that are in there, given where valuations have gone. That's Europe over the US. And then emerging market high yield, as Ben said, with what's been happening and some of the Hong Kong, you know, Chinese high yield, there are certain elements of that, which, again, are probably our favourite parts of the high yield index as well.
And when you say Europe, Matt, are you including the good old UK in that?
I am, to a certain degree. It's a very small part of the market. It hasn't quite widened enough yet, but it's at least it's cheaper than the US market, but generally does lag a little bit. But it's probably Europe first, UK second, US third.
Okay, fine. Thank you. And Ben, what about you for the equity side?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I'm looking at things is from a valuation perspective, just trying to think when, you know, almost when enough people are negative and the valuation got so low that it can't get any lower. And just for the second half of the year, I'd almost see a continuation of the first half of the year to some degree. So China, which has probably been in some sort of recession in the first half of the year, it's hard to define exactly what a recession is in China, but been under a lot of pressure, probably outperformed. And maybe over the second half of the year, we could continue to outperform if, you know, their policymakers are able to put in the support that's required. But elsewhere, policymakers are still tightening monetary policy. So in Europe and in the US, they're still tightening. So on that basis, we're still waiting for the recession to happen. Europe is probably closer to a recession, and maybe people are most negative on Europe. So maybe that's somewhere in the middle. And the US, I think it's slowly dawning on people that the US might not be quite as strong in such a good position as people are hoping. And of course, if China's in a recession and Europe is in a recession, then the US will presumably be dragged down again. So I don't know. US would probably be my least favourite area at the minute.
Okay. And as you say, it does feel a bit of a waiting game, but hopefully when we get those Q2 results coming through, some of the mists will lift. In the meantime, Matt, Ben, thanks so much for your insights today. It's been really, really interesting. I found it really interesting. And for all our current thinking, you can always go to the LGIM blog, where you'll find lots of news and current views. So in the meantime, thanks again, Matt and Ben, and thank you to all for listening. Thank you.
Enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal and General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, lgim.com.
Copyright 2021 Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For professional investors only.